Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
I grocery shop constantly. It's how I know you're bananas.
Wow. In New York City, I break headlines and hearts.
Okay. That was...
I can't take credit because my friend Ryan came up with it with me because, you know, every time, you know, you're, I'd say like once a week when you're out with your friends drunk, you... Oh my God, what's your housewife's tagline?
Listen, Ryan Andy's and Girls, shout out to Ryan, Andy's Girls, it takes a village. You guys, it's Andy's Girls episode 100,000,000,000,000.
Love that number.
Thank you so much. Scientific as always. Episode, I think, 117 and like maybe 3/4. Who's to say? I am so excited for an all new guest.
I am honored to be here.
This is your AG bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. This is like your moment, your christening, your whatever.
Am I officially an Andy's girl? One of Andy's girls?
You are. This is Andy your Cohen, official Andy's girl's birth. This is what's happening.
It's the birthday.
So excited. Gibson Johns. First off, maybe the best name of all time. Is that? It has to be your real name.
It's my real name. I often get called John on email because it's
yes,
a kind
because
of reverse.
Because people think it's
Gibson
John
is a last
Gibson.
Name historically. Yes, I've never met another Gibson first name ever in my life. But yeah, my name is Gibson Johns.
Oh my God, Gibson Johns, you are the managing editor at AOL Entertainment mm-hmm. and a proud Bravo-holic.
Like beyond. Beyond. Like, I don't even know what's the term after Bravo-holic. I don't know if there is one, but... That's where I think that where we're kind of like in the same same sphere there.
Can I also just say I am so happy that everyone is now using the term Bravoholic, which I actually, spoiler alert, created a couple years ago.
No way.
And for a long period of time, the only way, like, people would reach out to me from like matches from Hinge or something, because I used it on my Hinge profile. And I remember somebody Googled and they were like, I found your website because you are the only thing that came up when I Googled Bravoholic, which I was like,
SEO, baby.
I was like, spoiler alert, thanks so much. And now it is a thing. And I am in no way bitter. Just kidding. I'm like 45% bitter.
Do you ever get credit for this? Because I have heard that term 100,000 times.
I have never gotten credit for it. And Bravo reached out to me in the spring when they were like, we want to invite you to the first ever certified Bravoholics event at Bravo HQ. And I was so excited and thrilled, but I was also like,
like, where's my dough? Where's my check?
And then someone followed me on Instagram whose handle is Bravoholics, and it's blown up. Like, people use it. Bravo uses it.
I think that one might follow me too. Yeah.
I need to how do I do like an invite? You know AOL. You know the dial up. How do I?
I don't know. We have to kind of retrace the steps here.
Can someone
who was like the first person to use it after you? Who was the listener who like released it out?
How did they know?
Show your face.
Can someone who understands technology let me know how I can prove that I was the creator of it, which I 1,000% was.
We need a satchel of gold there for sure.
We need. Can someone be my technology satchel of gold? Who's the person that interviewed Light? I mean, created Light. What's his face? Guys, I'm so tired. Ed Franklin? Al Franklin? Ted Franklin? Ben Franklin.
Person.
Ben Franklin. So if someone can prove that I am the Ben Franklin of Bravo or whatever, I can't think about history right now. My brain is melting. It is 750 degrees.
It really is.
In New York City. But I feel like I'm going to die. But we are braving it because, holy shit, there have been some moments on Bravo this week that have been hot. Spicy hot. So listen, Gibson Johns, which I want to just say over and over. I want to call you Gibson John and Gibson Johns.
If you want, you can just call me Gibson Johns the whole time. Sort of like a Harry Hamlin situation. Like, you're Lisa Rinna, I'm Harry Hamlin.
Oh my God, I'm so into being the Lisa Rinna and the Lisa Rinna, Harry Hamlin dynamic.
I love that.
I feel like that is a role I was meant to play. So Gibson, let's talk a little bit about your Bravo journey. So when did you start watching Real Housewives? And is Real Housewives the first Bravo show that you started watching? How did they hook you?
I was watching New York from the beginning for sure.
Okay, got it.
I don't watch OC. But so I wasn't there the first. Maybe I would kind of off and on catch an episode here and there. But
totally.
I was hooked with New York. I watched early Atlanta. I watched early Jersey. I watched early all of them except for OC, religiously. I'm trying to think, were like Project Runway, were those shows before or after? I don't remember kind of the genesis of Bravo.
I want to say Project Runway was before Real Housewives.
Okay, so I watched early Project Runway. So maybe that's sort of where, I don't remember the first kind of commercial for Real Housewives that I saw. But
yeah.
I've been there since the beginning. There was definitely a moment in the middle there, like kind of all the seasons that I didn't check out, but I wasn't as sort of like dedicated to it throughout college and whatever. But I've been there since the beginning. With a lot
so
of
have
women.
You watched all of New York?
Yes, all of New York.
So the famed Carol v. Bethany, what side were you on last season?
Bethany hardcore.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What were you? Tell me everything. What was your stance? What were your thoughts?
Bethany is, I'm a Bethany stan. Love Bethany. Love New York, and I loved Carol. Like, I loved Carol for her first several seasons, but I think that last season, I kind of think that she decided she didn't want to be friends with Bethany anymore, and I don't necessarily blame her, because I think Bethany's probably demands out of
a
lot of friendship.
I think she's probably a problematic
and
friend.
I think that she probably admit that herself, that she wants a lot from her friends, mm-hmm. and maybe it's not as much of an even friendship, but I kind of think that Carol might have decided that she didn't want to be friends with Beth anymore. She kind of saw how the dynamic was sort of looking from the outside. I think that she changed her appearance, she changed her wardrobe, she kind of changed her demeanor on the show overall, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I kind of, I don't know, I just think that Bethany, obviously she wasn't clearly innocent in the situation, and mm-hmm. I saw both sides, but I kind of sympathized with Bethany a little bit in that situation. And I... because I think that friendship was so, I loved watching them together. I thought that they were, that was a real friendship. They hung out.
Yeah, they went to the Galapagos Islands. Oh my God, you don't go to the Galapagos Islands with an acquaintance.
With your co-star.
Right.
Yeah, like they were friends, and it made me sad because I think Bethany still really wanted to be Carol's friend. And I'm not sure Carol wanted to be Bethany's friend.
I think that at a certain point, Carol checked out, mm-hmm. and she might not have been super explicit about why in the moment. And then when she felt like she was bringing all of these receipts, literal and figurative, to the reunion, it was sort of past the point where it mattered. And I think had they not been shooting this for a TV show, I mean, they wouldn't be friends to begin with, but had they not been shooting this for a TV show, I think there would have been an organic moment where they could have had like a serious friendship totally. Come to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And because they didn't, and because their job was really to exacerbate any kind of tension and talk about it in confessionals and watch all that shit play back, it only heightened the fissure, if totally. That makes
no,
any
I,
sense.
I completely agree with you. But at the end of the day, it just made me a little bit sad to watch it implode because, again, like I think a lot of the relationships on these shows, like some of them are just for the cameras, some of them are just for the show, and that's fine with me. But when they go deeper, I love it because I think it makes for a more genuine watching, like kind of viewing experience. And seeing that kind of implode was just disappointing.
It's hard to rewatch. I just rewatched last season's reunion, and honestly, when they're yelling at each other, it's difficult. And it's difficult because they both are genuinely upset, and also the way that they went about it was like not great with like the looking at my phone and like looking at text and whatever. It's just, it's not interesting television.
They went low with Bethany and Carol and the reunion last season was not fun to watch, in my opinion. It got too dark.
And I also do think that there is an argument to be made that Andy was not necessarily like Switzerland.
Definitely not. That's a valid point for sure. And I think that was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
That was pretty obvious in the reunion. I think like, listen, Andy and Bethany are friends in real life. I think Bethany's probably one of his favorite housewives across franchises. And I think it's probably hard not to show favorites in that situation.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know. It's hard.
I think he has been friends with her. I don't think his friendship is as close as it once was.
Totally.
I think he understands the value of Bethany. And also, Bethany really comes alive in reunion cycles. Like, she understands this game probably better than anyone else. So even when she's like blind to it, it's still pretty good TV.
Completely.
Like, even if you're not on her side, she'll deliver, and maybe that delivery will be like strengthening your hate of her, but regardless, something mm-hmm. is going to happen. And I felt like this most recent reunion cycle, it was interesting to me. I felt like New York this season was a mixed bag. There were highs that were historic, but overall, I felt like, or rather lows that were historic, regardless,
totally.
The low was a high.
I think the last two seasons of New York before this one, the last two before that where they went to Mexico.
Insane.
Where Luann, we kind of see Luann's arrest and
closure
of her marriage.
Colombia.
Kind of those two seasons are two of the best seasons of Real Housewives of all time, mm-hmm. maybe the two best. And
In the top.
Anything in comparison to that was going to be a slight letdown, but I still... And it's also worth noting that for some reason, New York this season was shorter.
Why was it shorter?
I don't know.
Does anybody know? Does Bravo know?
I haven't asked anybody at Bravo. My theory is that it had to do with kind of... I mean, the reunion was taped so early because of, I think, Luann's court appearance. And maybe it had something to do with that. Maybe they thought they had enough. But I'm like, I still think... For me, at the end of the day, I'd rather watch the New York ladies go sit at a dinner table, and not even fight. They are such entertaining television to me that I would have loved two or three more even filler episodes. Because to me, filler New York is better than almost anything else. And so I think it's worth noting that. But again, like I think the comparison to the last two seasons is so hard. It was definitely up and down this season, but I enjoyed it. I thought they ended it really well with, I mean, the Miami trip gave me way more, I way more than I expected.
Agreed.
When I heard they weren't going international, I was like, oh God, like, what are we getting this season? I don't know. Was there a budget cut for New York? I don't know what the deal was.
Can you imagine if they cut the budget for New York and gave it to Beverly Hills or something? That would be honestly a crime.
But then it's hard because then you look at the ratings and Beverly Hills' ratings dwarf anybody else's ratings.
Which
is wild to me because we can get into that later. But, you know, I think New York to me is the kind of cream of the crop, and
it's difficult because essentially all of my guests are New York and LA based. Like LA, they come here, or it's when I'm there, and everybody almost universally says New York is my favorite, possibly Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I think people feel like Potomac is delivering at the top
more
of anybody,
so than
else.
Anybody else.
But I don't know that I've had anybody on. And listeners, feel free to fact check me on this. I'm sure that I have. I just don't remember who's like my favorite of all time is Beverly Hills. Now, that might have been the case a couple seasons ago, but certainly this season, it would be difficult.
It went down in rankings for me this season.
Yeah, it was honestly rough, tough stuff because it was frustrating to watch New York, not in the sense that New York wasn't solid, because even like A Smooth Ride with New York, there are things that I can pull, like Ramona saying that Dennis was weak because he was an addict. I mean, that was like maybe the worst thing she has ever said, that she somehow got away with saying
somehow
at the reunion. She was just like, I'm so sorry, it was terrible.
I mean, that's
I can't
just
believe
a classic
it.
Ramona apology.
Right. And then when Bethany was like digging into her and she's like, no, really, like you have something against me. Like this is the disease, is like whatever hatred you have against me. Like, let's figure out why so we can really treat this, since I'm diagnosing it. And she's like, no, I don't know. Oh my God, a bird. Like, it was strange to me.
I mean, where you said that Bethany is kind of like on top of her game during reunions, Ramona is the complete opposite. Ramona, she's fallen asleep.
Like,
something about reunions that Ramona just can't, I don't know if she can't wrap her mind around, maybe the shootings are too long, like something about it just doesn't really click with her a lot of the time. She has her moments, obviously, but like overall she's like, is on the end of the couch, like kind of dazing out. And
I feel like it's because she's genuinely incapable of ever being accountable. So the fact that you're having a sit down and you have to own up to stuff and she can't own it. I mean, like, she really says, oh, I'm so sorry, it was so terrible. Can you believe I said that? Did I say that? Oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom. You know what? SoulCycle really took the shit out of me today, so let me do some stretches. I mean, the best parts of Ramona are when she, like, gets off the couch to pretend to do some of, like, Dorinda's calisthenics or something else. I mean, she's not present, but she wasn't really present this season. Yeah. It's just that she's such a garbage monster. She gets away with not having perfect attendance because when she's there, she's so awful that it's great.
With her, I mean, not going off the awful thing, but just with her and Sonia, it's the same kind of similar thing where it's like, you just can't make this shit up. Like, they are so in their own worlds, and they have been around. That part of the reason why I love New York is that their connections, even though they might not be totally best friends outside of the show, like, they have been friends and co-stars and however, whatever you want to label it, for a decade.
If not longer.
No, like, for
the show's probably been on for decades.
It's like, New York has so many of, like, essential OGs. Like, Sonia season 2, Luann and Bethany and Ramona are all from the first season. They've gone in and out, obviously.
I think Sonia was 3.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think you're right, too.
I think Kelly was 2. But I forget. Whatever. Same difference.
To me, it's like Sonia's been there since the beginning.
Right. She feels like an OG.
Dorinda feels like a semi-OG. Like, to me, it's like these New York ladies, they go way back, and they kind of know how to, like, they know how to kind of see past things. They know how everyone works and what their dynamics are. And that's sort of another reason why I think that, like, it's fun to watch.
And there's an energy to just filming in New York City because this city is the devil. Hate it forever. It's part of the privilege of being
hate to love.
A New York City resident is that I just talk about how much I hate it every single moment of the day. But there's an energy here. And so it helps when, you know, it's like the fake Sex and the City, the extra character is the city. I mean, it helps that these women have an energy about them. You sort of have to have an energy to survive here, even if it's completely insane. Plus, they know each other. Plus, there's like the whole extra layer of fake society, which Jill Zarin was obsessed with. I mean, which she brought to the table and was the connecting thread for all of these women. Plus, you had actual members of society, which Luann was once upon a time before she was falling
Tinsley
into bushes.
Was.
Tinsley like created society, new society,
yes,
the new age yoga.
She was Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week.
She literally, those golden curls, which is part of the reason why I think she freaks out about straightening her hair, because she's like, no, they won't remember me. Because when Tinsley,
it's her signature look.
It is. And if you read articles and interviews with Tinsley at the time, the reason that she always kept her hair curled was so that paparazzi and photographers, when she showed up to society events, if she had essentially the same basic face, they would remember her. So I think now it's a trigger for her when people are like, cut your hair, straighten it, because she, not that she doesn't think people will recognize her, but she remembers that that was her calling card to greatness.
Totally.
And so for her, it's like letting go a piece of that, which, as we know, the women of New York are not great at.
They're just not.
They're not.
Yeah.
So have you interviewed any of the New York housewives?
I've interviewed all of them.
What do you mean?
I've talked to all of them. I've interviewed all of the New York housewives.
Wait, so Bethany is your number one fave?
Bethany, I think, might be, even though I have my moments with her, like internally, I'm
no,
like.
No, I get it.
We're
all complicated in our imaginary best friendships with Bethany. Yeah.
Like something kind of just like irreplaceable to the table. And I think that, like you said earlier, she knows how to play the game better than anybody else.
Yeah, she does.
She's legit. I think there are obviously moments where she's not, but I think she's so self-aware and kind of aware of like the Monopoly board of the chessboard of
how to play the game.
Yeah, so I've interviewed her 3 times.
Who was your favorite interview? Doesn't have to be your favorite person. Who was your favorite person to talk to?
Okay, so when I interviewed Jorinda.
Yes.
This is a good story. So had a Home Goods sponsored holiday cocktail party at her old apartment.
Of course she
did. Two or three Christmases ago, I want to say.
That is so housewife. Because
you know how she just loves Home Goods.
She loves Home Goods. Loves
Christmas decorations. Yes. And so the whole thing was that she was like bringing like the Berkshire's decorations to the city for one season. Like,
was this before the Nutcracker, after, or that same season?
I think it was I think it might have been
before.
It was before, but maybe it was during filming that season.
Got it.
Yeah. So I go in there.
You go in where? To her apartment.
Her apartment. Her little apartment on the Upper East Side.
I won't tell you
where it was, but when I walked into that, past that doorman, I was like giddy. I couldn't describe it.
Heaven on earth.
Walk into her apartment. There's, it's like a packed house. It's small apartment, really beautiful, high ceilings though, so it felt bigger than it potentially was.
And this was a cocktail event to celebrate her relationship with Home Goods.
It was basically like she was getting paid by Home Goods.
Okay, got it.
Like, I decorated my entire apartment with these like snow globes and Christmas trees and whatever. So, but it was packed in the second bed. It's a 2-bedroom apartment. The second bedroom was like the coat check. So the only place to do her interview was in her bedroom.
Yes.
So literally I interviewed Jorinda. We had both had,
cocktails,
beverages.
Love it.
And we were sitting on her bed.
Yes.
Sitting on her bed. Like, there was just so much to take in. I couldn't even deal. There was like wigs that she was like alluding to using in certain moments. And she was just having the time of her life. We talked for like 15 minutes. And that was my first housewife interview, but I had like a little more liquid courage than usual. So I was like, you know what? Like, I have to.
And we hit
it off. Like, it was great. I had to ask her after if we could recreate one of her iconic moments. So I had her clip me. Like, literally, I was like, Jorinda, like, we're going to go stand over by this window and the publicist is going to take a video of us. I'm going to pretend to talk about something and you're going to clip me. And I have a video on my Instagram way back and like whatever that was.
And she was game.
So game. And then she invited me this past year to her Valentine's party because I ran into her at Fashion Week.
I know
how that sounds.
No, I love it.
I was in the elevator at Milk Studios and I had seen her one time at last year's premiere party since then. And she was like, oh my God, like, I haven't invited you to my Valentine's party yet. And I was like, no, I would know that. I need to go, whatever.
For real.
So I went to her new apartment. Their Valentine's Day party this February.
Sutton Place.
Yes.
A neighborhood I had not heard of.
Barbara Kay. This is before the premiere of the season. So Barbara Kay was there. Carol was there.
Really?
Yeah.
And it wasn't filmed.
It wasn't filmed.
And this was just a genuine party that she was having?
Yep. She just loves to celebrate holidays. And it was on the roof of her apartment building. And there were like, there was heart-shaped pizza. There was Vanderpump Rosé. There was this whole dessert table. And a lot of them were out of town. So like going into it, I was obviously checking all their Instagram stories.
Right, to see who would be there.
Who the hell is going to be here? They were like all in Miami, obviously. So I was unsure who was going to be there. I walk in, Barbara Kay is there, and I don't know if they had said if she was a friend or not yet, but I was like, got to introduce myself, talk to her for a while. And that was, so basically she reconciled with Carol at that party because her and Carol hadn't talked since the hot mic.
Dorinda and Carol.
No, Barbara Kay.
Oh, Barbara Kay and Carol.
Barbara Kay and Carol had not talked since the hot mic moment when Barbara, from like before.
Right. When she talked about Lou and Tom.
Like wanting to go through the wedding before getting divorced, whatever.
Totally.
They hadn't really talked since then. And so she was like nervous about going up to Carol. And she was like, should I talk to her? Whatever. And I was like, go for it. Like Carol, like she was in good spirits. Why not? It's been years. Like, you're on the show now. Carol's not on the show. There's nothing to lose by going up to her. So Barbara went up to Carol and they sort of reconciled at that party.
Why would Carol be angry at Barbara Kay? Why was Barbara Kay nervous about talking to you? Because Barbara Kay threatened
they sort
the lawsuit?
It didn't happen on camera, whatever happened between them, but it stemmed from that moment. And I think there was some sort of legal threatening happening.
Yeah.
About, again, I don't know exactly the kind of the details of the thing, but they basically like, I think they might have argued had a kind of falling out over that moment.
Yeah.
And maybe somebody didn't take accountability for it or somebody did or didn't, whatever. So nobody else was at that party, unfortunately, with Dorinda. But
that's a nice little crowd. I feel like seeing Carol anywhere in the wild is like kind of great.
And she looked stunning. She had like this big pink faux fur coat on. John was there. Dorinda's John. I'm trying to think if there, like, anything else happened at that party. It was just kind of like surreal to be there
amongst the women without a recording crew.
I know, and I wasn't there for, like, I didn't interview anybody. That was just sort of like a hangout situation.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So that was Dorinda, Bethany. Sonia is, you know, I love
crazy.
Her.
Yeah,
like,
she's loopy.
Sometimes I don't know what she's telling me.
Right. No, it never makes sense.
Yeah, that was a recent one with Portia, Melissa, and Sonia for the Work Done video, Fiber One Brownie.
So you interview them to hype their commercial
music video might as well be a commercial,
so sorry, which was shot in Mexico City with Portia, Dorinda,
Melissa, Tamara, and Sonia. Yes, so the main players were Portia, Melissa, and Sonia. Dorinda and Tamara make cameos in this music video. Have you seen the music video, Work Done?
Yeah, and I remember when Melissa was she had all of these social media Insta stories of her in some, and that Joe was in too, of her in some crazy studio, and they were tagging it Mexico. And I was like, what the fuck is she doing? Because it looked like an expensive production.
It totally was.
So I was like, what the fuck is happening? And then I think, was it Dorinda that was doing that too, or Sonia? Somebody else was like IRL in real time. So I didn't know what was happening. And then the commercial / music video came out, and I was like,
on Monday,
holy shit, this is
I mean, you,
awful,
I mean, we all know
wonderful.
That it's like, it's awful wonderful whenever the kind of different women from different cities get together. We have all of the movie promos that they air on Bravo.
Yeah.
Our lovely Godzilla one where Dorinda was Godzilla. Do you
I love that
one?
That was really
so
good with Karen. Yeah, I love that.
But this was like not connected to Bravo technically. It was like Fiber One redid their brownies. They got worked on the brownies, so they kind of made this whole
plastic surgery joke.
Yeah,
I feel like it cheapens the franchise a little bit. Fiber One, yeah. I don't know
about cheapening it. I think that it was interesting that like they were being so, you know, quote unquote forthcoming about having quote work done, you know, like what does that mean, kind of. You know, it left me a little speechless at first when I first saw it, but I knew I was interviewing them about it. But they were fun. So Dorinda and Tamara didn't really do press for it because they were just kind of cameos in the
video.
But Portia and Melissa and Sonia had this full on press day. They did like tons of interviews all day, all together. Mine was not on camera, so I just kind of like was chilling out with them on a couch.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And they were a fun group together. I mean, I love all of them individually. So together, it was quite the crew.
I mean, I love them individually. I just feel weird about the fact that it's like, because to me, I feel like they know that there's like a wink and a smile, like a wink and a nod. And I don't think that Lou gets that so much with like her cabaret, as we saw, as evidenced on the reunion. Like she doesn't get the sort of humor that people have for her show, that it's not just straight up reverence. And for this, I'm like, I know that they have a sense of humor about it because it is explicit. I just also feel like, I don't know. I want them to make money. I do.
No, I totally get what you're saying.
I feel weird about it, but I'm so happy that they're happy.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, like, I was there to interview them. So I sort of wanted to, you know, you kind of talk about the partnership, you talk about the collaboration, but then you want more.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously. I think, so New Jersey obviously has done filming and that's coming out soon, but Atlanta was still kind of, they're filming in Toronto this weekend.
Yeah, they're doing Carnival. They're still in the thick of it.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Tanya's still there, which is around. So strange to
me. I talked to her at the end of last season too.
Oh my God.
Because I'll kind of take any Bravo adjacent
person. I can't. I heard talking about her tech money. I'm like, okay, cool. This is like amazing for you genuinely in life, but I swear to God, I do not care.
But I talked to, I really wanted to know sort of about Kenya coming back and kind of how that's been with Portia and Nene.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of asked about that. I sort of asked all of them all about, because they've all welcomed back big people. Sonia's welcomed back Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa's welcomed back Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
And not full time, obviously, but she came back and that was kind of a big return. And then Kenya, she was only gone for one season, but I think kind of a lot happened and she was welcome back this season. So I wanted to sort of know how that went. And Portia, in the midst of kind of telling me about that, she said that she had only filmed with Nene once. So I would kind of want to know, how have Nene and Kenya been? Because obviously there's a whole thing. That's why Cynthia and Nene aren't friends anymore.
Right.
And she was like, I wouldn't know. I've only filmed with Nene once.
How does Nene get away with this? I mean, if we're going to talk about how Ramona may or may not have been a participant, Ramona still feels full time.
No,
I do not understand the point of Nene. And I feel like Nene has a negative impact on the show because she challenges the idea that she needs to be a willing, active participant, which shuts down real conversation and conflict.
I mean, her behavior on the last reunion was like,
unbelievable.
To me, it was shocking, and I couldn't believe they even let her act like that.
Yeah.
I think when Nene is great, she's given us so many classic moments. She is the queen of one-liners. Like,
totally.
She is such good television when she wants to be, and I think more and more recently, it's just, she doesn't want to engage, and to me, it's like, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
And I would love if Nene was kind of in full force and kind of willing to go there.
Yeah.
But for some reason, she just isn't, I don't know if she thinks she's above it. I don't know.
I think she doesn't
have any genuine friendships on the show anymore. Like, I don't know what it is, but the women want to engage with her. But they also know that they know that they can exist without her on the show. But I think Nene thinks that the show can't exist without her. And I don't know. I mean, I think there'll probably be drama without Nene. I think if people are refusing to film with her or vice versa, like, what kind of television does that give us? What kind of seasons does that give us? Because Nene should be a central figure, I think, on every season of Atlanta. She is so, but I don't know.
If she's game to play.
Totally.
But if she's not, she's not necessary.
No.
The season without her was great. So, like, step up or step out.
And we've seen the same with, I think we've seen kind of glimmers of that with other people. I think Bethany's had her moments kind of either right before she left or right when she came back.
Totally,
she really didn't want to engage with it. She would pull herself out of these situations.
That party in the Hamptons with Ramona. Totally.
100%. And I think Bethany was self-aware enough where she was like, I can't, people don't like watching this. And that people are going to turn on you if you don't engage with the other ladies or with kind of what the show calls you to do. And I think the tides are a little bit turning on. I kind of read Instagram comments about the reports about what's going on behind the scenes, and people aren't on any side with anything really. I mean, we obviously sympathize. We are sad about kind of Greg's cancer last season and kind of what Nene has gone through personally, but
you also have a job.
You're signed up for the show.
Yeah. And I appreciate that Nene showed us the challenges that she and Greg were going through. Truly. I think that was really important in showing that, you know, if you don't have a marriage that's in a good place to begin with, a stressor, like the huge challenge and chaos that can come with that kind of diagnosis when your partner is going through some sort of major health struggle, and how that challenges and changes a relationship that's already feeling a little bit of instability. I think that's incredibly real and fascinating.
Of course.
But you know, conversely, that's not everything. Mm-hmm. And you also have to be willing to participate, and having an attitude is not, an action that can substitute behavior if you're unwilling to play the game. And the fact that her one shining moment is like physically assaulting a camera person, which has happened again in another franchise, but and then not owning up to it and then being kind of a dick about it in a way of like, blah, 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 blah. I won't apologize is just strange to me.
And then going on to ice Cynthia out in a way that just like, I mean, I know there were different opinions on sort of what that kind of that whole situation with Kenya and bringing Kenya to that party and whether she knew about it or not. But at the end of the day, the way she iced Cynthia out was so hard to watch and heartbreaking. And because Cynthia has been her biggest advocate and Cynthia has been such a great friend to Nini, it was really sad to watch that on the reunion, especially because she just didn't really back it up with any reasoning. She just kind of was just like kind of shrugged.
When they decide that they do not want to play the game, that's when I start to lose respect for them. And I lost respect for Nini in that moment, not the first time. And I lost respect for LVP this season on Beverly Hills. And I want to get your thoughts. So you've watched, you know, we talked about Beverly Hills, which is a ratings behemoth, whether or not it deserves it. I think this season, a lot of people were tuning in consistently, whether or not they were team LVP, because so much was happening.
Totally.
Through the media, through blogs, there's been a lot of conversation. Obviously, that's how this season splintered, because of Radar Online and rumors and all that. So, couple questions for you. Whose side are you on, LVP or everyone else? Keep it real.
I'm going to keep it real. I am not on everyone else's side, but I'm also not... LVP is not innocent in the situation. I think we all kind of agreed on that, but I think that so many of them got off scot-free.
Yeah.
And the gang mentality really turned me, kind of gave me the like a bad vibe. I didn't like how they all were of the same opinion.
Yeah.
They didn't kind of call each other out until the very end when she had pulled herself out of the situation.
Right. They formed an alliance that lasted through part three.
It was too much of an alliance for me. There was not enough kind of diversion from that.
Totally.
There wasn't enough questioning about kind of what happened at the very beginning of Puppygate. Sure. You know, like, I think that she...
Like, what happened with the puppy?
Yeah, like, there's literally what happened with the puppy, and I think that she got off scot-free. I think that Teddy kind of... Her part in it was... She sort of, like, she quote-unquote owned it, but I'm not sure she totally owned
that. No, she didn't.
Even though she, like, apologized for it on the reunion. I guess I'm in the middle because, and I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I'm not firm on either side just because of the way that everyone else was acting.
Do you think that LVP, do you think that she leaked the story to Radar Online?
I don't think she personally did, but again, I don't think she's innocent. I think she has some sort of involvement in this situation.
Do you think she was aware of it when it happened?
That's such a tough thing. Maybe. Yeah, I do. I think that she did know. And I think kind of her past and the accusations against her in the past kind of give credence to that theory that she did have some involvement, kind of, because she's been accused of leaking stories in the past. So, I think that she probably wasn't involved and she probably knew about it. But again, I think that, like, I don't know. That's not the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. I have a satchel of gold from Beth in Santa Monica. Okay. Beth says, hey, I was just listening to the newest episode, and this occurred to me while the two of you were talking about LVP thinking Bravo owed her something. That very dynamic is the one she has set up with everyone. From Cedric to Brandy, she and Ken thrive on creating a dynamic where they have given something and then feel that because of that, they can make that person do their bidding. And then when that person refuses to co-sign on bad behavior or cover up for LVP, she turns on them and makes herself the victim. This must be some terrible pattern. Create a power dynamic by convincing someone you've done something for them only to turn them into your tool for manipulation. When they refuse, make it seem like they hurt the person who has done so much for them. It's downright practiced and pathological behavior. And, you know, Beth, that's a thinker. That's something to think about. And I would add on to that that the victimization this season is fascinating for someone who is in many ways online the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And she's coming, LVP is coming out very, very strong. And the fact that they're using the phrase bullying repeatedly when she admits that she removed herself from the situation, be it production and also directly communicating this with these women for many, many months, 8 or 10. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can say you were bullied when you're not directly communicating with any right. of these women, and they're not necessarily saying as much online anywhere near to what you're saying. And by you, I mean LVP. I think it's a strong point. I wonder what will happen to dear old Dr. quote-unquote John Sessa in like 2 years.
I don't want to hear that name ever again.
I can't.
I'm so sorry.
Dr. John, even as recently as, what was it, yesterday?
Something with Denise.
He was saying something like, Denise went on Watch What Happens and was like a little drunky poo. And
oh, yeah.
So a listener, a viewer called in and asked her about why she wasn't no longer team LVP. And she had a response that genuinely did not make any sense. I rewatched it this morning and I was like, what is she? She was definitely, she had a little Tequila Katie moment.
She definitely
moment.
Had some of that. What does she drink? She drinks
Casamigos.
Casamigos.
George Clooney.
Rosado
she had
on
a
the rocks.
I mean, she loves yes. her tequila and she loves it mm-hmm. a lot. So she was like, blah, 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 blah. And she essentially, what did she even say? She essentially said, like, situations happened. And what I think she meant was there wasn't a dynamic with her and LVP that changed, but what she was saying was like the environment changed.
Totally.
It wasn't that she was no longer team LVP. It's just that too much information was coming out. So Lisa obviously was told about this. And as we know, as she says, she doesn't watch Bravo. So mm-hmm. Dr. John, quote unquote, doctor, then responds online and says something along the lines of like, okay, the situation didn't change, but when you guys were fleeing your house, you asked us for help fostering 8 of your dogs and we helped you and we never talked about it. And Denise then responded and was like, that was amazing, blah, blah, blah. And then Aaron got involved
by texting John
and texted
right?
John, which Lisa like, tweeted this private text where he was like something. So, you know, everyone uses the phrase defamation of character, and I always think that's like, adorable. But yeah. he's like, there's a defamation of character, blah, blah, blah. Don't talk shit about my wife. Otherwise, a lawyer will get involved. John shares this with Lisa, who then paints John as the victim and posts this tweet online, which, by the way, makes nobody look good. Aaron looks like a moron.
Here's
John looks like a pussy. And Lisa looks like the cast member of a show that she
totally. I mean, here's the thing. I think we can all agree. I don't know if we have different opinions on the whole situation, but we can all agree that John Sessa is not the victim in the situation. Like, that is just not the case. And I think just like the bringing in the wildfire and saving the dogs and what have you, even that into it, I'm just like, why are we talking about this?
To be honest, I actually didn't have a problem with that part. I was like, oh, that's interesting that she called them and asked them for help and they helped. And it wasn't that Denise was a bad doggy parent. She was fostering a fuck ton of animals, which if anybody watched her previous spinoff, It's Complicated, whatever the fuck it's called.
On E,
many, many years ago, she's a avowed dog lover, animal lover. She had a fucking ton of dogs. They were misplaced. And Vanderpump Dog stepped in and helped them find homes. And I genuinely think that's amazing. What I don't think that is amazing is this continued dialogue that Lisa Vanderpump is a legitimate victim in this situation when she quit the show. I don't know how much longer I can stand her stands and her team and herself repeatedly talking about what a victim she was when she was like the star of the show. And the reason that she was the star of the show was because she was manipulative behind the scenes.
She got herself there.
And by the way, that's not a bad thing. Thank fucking God she did.
We need that on the show.
I think she's showing her power by showing how the show dissolved with her absence, because these women are all betas or specific alphas, but they are, none of them are meant to hold the center diamond.
I definitely wish that Lisa would just let everyone else's actions do the talking.
But there aren't enough of actions.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
I kind of wish that she hadn't been so vocal on Twitter and doesn't. I wish she would just stop kind of harping on this whole situation and let just sort of like, thank God the season's over, because I think that that's sort of gonna finally bury it. I don't think this is going to kind of go into next season. I don't, like, I think that there needs to be a huge change up. I'm so sick of this entire situation. And, but again, like, she's perpetuating it. She keeps going on Twitter. She keeps responding to comments. They keep on, she has her Johns do some of her work for her.
And Camille plays into it. Camille tries totally. To take on that role so she can get the sympathy vote. And I get it. I understand Camille's place, because that reunion cycle was frustrating for me.
Oh,
I could not believe the amount of camera time given to someone who wasn't full-time and a friend of, and the amount of burying that happened. Mm-hmm. And I understood why Camille got up from that couch, because Andy used the phrase trash talking. Mm-hmm. And when you use the phrase, how did you feel when Camille was trash talking? You were saying, how did you feel when this person was being a piece of shit? How do you feel like when this person was, it's like a step above gossiping. Totally. You're giving your opinion of their gossiping, and you're using it as a question, which gives it validity. Now, he may have been completely right, but I understand why Camille got up and was like, fuck you guys. I also do not understand, for the life of me, I don't understand why Camille was considered the star of the reunion. That's a signal that the show is very sick.
You know why, but
yeah,
we
know why.
It shouldn't be the case. No.
The amount of seemingly joy and like I don't even know, I guess their own victimization with saying like, and how dare you talk about Dorit's money, and that is too low.
Oh,
and
my God,
we would never do that. That makes me think like all of you guys should get pink slips. You know, LVP's like, favorite color, because it was, you don't understand the job of the show. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the job of the show, if the rumors are correct and Denise's tweet yesterday is correct, mm-hmm. And blogs are correct from months prior or weeks prior, and Camille did say something that was racist racially insensitive, which allegedly was something along the lines of like, I don't have to apologize for being white, or why should I apologize for being white? And the production didn't use it. And mm-hmm. my thinking is, if it happened, which it seems like it did, and they didn't use it because they needed her to look like a victim, or it didn't play into their narrative of talking about the dog shit and like Lisa's dead brother and whatever forever and ever. Amen. That is so upsetting to me. And I'm not saying that as far as like, let's teach everybody a lesson. I'm not saying that pulling in anything else. I think it's very different from the Brett Kavanaugh issue. And I'm glad that was referenced on the show. I'm one of those people that likes mm-hmm. politics to be involved. I just think that would have been a nuanced level inside of that reunion filming. And if something genuine happened, and that is a genuine moment of Camille thinking that she's a victim and thinking that as a white woman, whatever, blah, blah, blah. If that happened and they didn't use it, my God, are you kidding? That would have been the only reason to actually have three parts.
Do you think it was too, like, too ugly? I mean, I there have been all these reports, but maybe it was just too, they definitely don't like talking about race on these shows, I don't think, but I don't know. We don't know exactly what happened. I'm not defending Camille at all. Like, whatever she said was inexcusable.
I think it
sounds like it got so, like, dark and dirty, like, that they just didn't want to go there. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't as nuanced as we would hope, you know? Maybe it
gets
really...
Denise said it in the context of, like, her adopted daughter has an African-American father. So I think when you bring your kids into it, I think that I have no choice but to 1,000% believe that it happened.
Oh, I believe it happened.
Yeah, I think it's a question of editing. I think it's a question of, I don't know, that it would have been too heavily against Camille, which is a symptom mm-hmm. of the greater disease.
Yeah.
It's upsetting to me that, like, these moments that would have been holy shit. I mean, they showed it for Kim Zolciak when she did her bullshit, race didn't matter before Twitter or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Racism didn't exist or something dumb. It's upsetting to me selfishly because that is such a what the fuck moment.
For sure.
And we have had what the fuck moments.
I would have loved to have seen how that played out.
Right. I don't think it's a matter of, like, litigious involvement, because they showed Phaedra calling the unveiling of Phaedra as someone that, like, manipulated mm-hmm. sexual assault for the benefit of her plot on Atlanta. So I don't know what it was. It's just upsetting to me. Yeah, it's upsetting to me that it may or may not have happened, aka it definitely happened mm-hmm. and wasn't shown on the show. And meanwhile, there are tons of people who are team LVP, and I hear you. I just think this is an ungodly end to this season.
Doesn't it all just make you feel just like icky. Like the whole, yeah, the, like the end of the season, I'm just sort of like, what did we just spend 4 months watching?
And for what? And how? Why is there nobody that stands? Why are we in a position where Camille rightly calls out the bullshit that's happening behind the scenes with Dorit and PK's financial mishigas and maybe stuff that's actually genuinely happening with Erica and Tom, and she's being buried for it. Like,
I know.
She has to apologize and be like, I'm so sorry, that was so mean. And then Dorit's like, well, I'll never trust you again, blah, 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 blah. That is the purpose of this show. Every single viewer, whether or not you're team Dorit, which is a team that does not exist, whether or not you're like team everybody else, you want to know what is going on because there is shit that is happening.
I get that, like, you can't quote talk about it, but like the people around you should be able to talk about it, and that they're not involved, they're on the show to kind of talk about what's going on in your life. And again, like there was two huge things that were happening outside of the show this season that we didn't get, no light was shed. And I get,
and it was referenced in passing.
Referenced in passing. And those would have, again, been legitimate issues. And I think that the fact that Camille was called out for bringing up a lawsuit that was happening, or, I mean, we don't know, whatever. But
there are several lawsuits.
Yeah, and
by
but
the
it's
way.
Like, why Beverly, why on Beverly Hills is that off limits, but on other franchises, like the other franchises that are better right now, they talk about anything.
Because they removed the person that would have been directly responsible, and God bless for making sure that shit comes out on camera, which is Lisa. If Lisa had stayed on the show, which totally. She should have, she and Camille could have brought this stuff up, and Lisa could have used it as a weapon before she walked off.
Do you? I mean, this just came to mind.
Yeah,
you
tell
know
me.
How she, you know how Lisa had Camille bring up the stuff about Taylor's husband.
Yeah, which we only got this season. Another moment
Lisa,
where I'm like, why wasn't that used?
Do you think
used?
Lisa had Camille bring up the lawsuit?
Sure, maybe, and.
You know,
if Camille
like,
wasn't
what if she
smart
was still
enough,
calling the shots?
I would love it. If Camille wasn't smart enough to bring that up on her own, which I think she I actually know. Is, then if Lisa was involved, God bless. But she's not watching the show. She doesn't care. She's too busy being sad.
So what is your ideal next, like, next Beverly Hills
Get rid of half
like?
Of them.
Which ones?
Teddy, Erica Jane, and I think some... Okay, so who would I leave? I would leave Kyle because I think she's a strong beta.
Yeah.
I would leave Rinna 1,000%. She's probably the most important person on that couch right now. Kyle, Rinna, and I would probably leave Dorit, but I need someone to be aggressively against her, vocally aggressively against her. And I don't know where Camille referenced the women being trash on Twitter. Camille is now like strongly back on attaching herself to LVP's asshole. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know how much bullshit she's going to let herself.
I think the whole race thing, like if that's where it went, I'm not sure she should be back.
I 1,000% that's a reason she should be back. We need to call this shit out when we see it. And also that's a large part of America that feels that way. So yeah, have it on the show, but talk about it or not, whatever.
Yeah, I think that Camille should be a housewife next season. And I think that at the end of the season, one of the most promising things that we saw was sort of the beginnings of the Denise and Camille dynamic. Yeah. Like, I think that dynamic has the potential to be a long-term, like, epic...
Yes, battle.
Back and forth.
Battle royale.
Like, I think there's something about Camille that Denise just can't, like, deal with, and it sets her off. It set her off at the agency party. It set her off at the reunion.
Yeah.
There's something in there that Denise is not, that they do not gel. And I think that could be amazing television.
Totally agree. I think Dorit brings out the best in Denise when Denise feels like she has to defend herself or whatever. And, you know, Camille does these things where she, season one, Camille was back, which I know several people are saying, and they are, in my words, in my mind, entirely correct with, like, someone says something to Camille and she hears something else, and then all she can hear is what she thought she heard. Mm-hmm. So season one, you know, why aren't you filming? Why are they filming you without Kelsey there? When what Kyle was saying was like, oh, spring break, is Kelsey going to be there? And now it's like, you yell at your kids, you make fun of them, you swear at them. And what Denise was saying was like, I want to protect my child from being upset. And I want to see more of that. Mm-hmm. I think that's real. I think that that's a real example of Camille being like slightly cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And I think Denise was triggered in that moment, and I loved it.
Yeah.
So let's see more of that.
Let's see more of that.
I don't think that Camille will allow herself to be back. I think Camille's still trying to figure out how she wants to play the game, and I don't know that she will allow herself to be back full time. But I also think if they are putting this much focus and attention on you, and you weren't even a friend of or whatever.
She deserves to be a full housewife.
You deserve it. She was the only one who deserved to hold
the
diamond.
She earned her keep.
Mm-hmm. She did, and nobody else did.
I mean, is there another instance when a friend of the cast,
Danielle Staub,
has she been on two and a half full parts of the reunion?
Oh,
they brought her in a half an hour into part one.
Yeah, that was a bad sign.
They took her off with 10 minutes left in part three. Like, that is unheard of in these reunions. Like, she was, again, like you said, the key player. Like, she's not a friend because she's essentially a classmate.
And I think that's a fuck you from me to production and the editors for putting so much of the focus of this on Camille. And I still, for the life of me, do not understand why that was not a two-parter, if not half of one.
Yeah,
and then just show me commercials for Atlanta for the remaining 36 minutes. So I'll call it a day. So listen, we need to have a conversation. I think that's all we really have to say about Beverly Hills.
I'm done. Let's go on to the next.
Oh my fucking God. I feel physically ill from the amount of time I spent on Katie Ross's social media in the last 48 hours.
It's a rabbit hole.
It is a rabbit hole, as was this week's Potomac, last week's Potomac, the week before, the best television of all of the television. And Katie, if we're going to talk about the importance of a friend of, Camille was obviously integral for Beverly Hills and was maybe the only Beverly Hills housewife still standing. Katie Ross is doing the job of cast members who are already doing fantastic work, production editors, the audience. She's responding in
one in a million.
One in a million. So we watched this season's Potomac, which was gangbusters, and ended.
It's been insane.
Completely insane. And it ended with a title card that said unseen production footage.
I mean,
which was a two-parter.
Magic words right there.
Magic words. It was a two-parter. The first part was audio, allegedly, even though we don't need to use the word allegedly, audio of the moment when Michael and the cameraman's ass made friends, when he is needing to be called over to that like little photo line at the rainbow party. And he says, "Hey, bud, how are you?" The cameraman says, "Don't do that. Please don't do that. Don't do that." Michael says, "Okay, no problem," and saunters over to his wife, the woman he is married to, and continues on his merry way. And then at the end, you get audio of...
from inside the basement.
Inside the basement, I think like 2 hours later or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's Michael having a conversation and saying something along the lines of like, "I didn't touch your ass," or something. And Monique tweeted, "Why can you hear my cousin's voice?" And is saying that some of that audio belongs to a relative and may not belong to the cameraman.
Right.
And Katie has been saying on social media, that's a direct example of how staged this production is. And if that's real, that calls into account all this other stuff and how much of that is real, how much of that is staged. And this is a mess. And she goes so all in that production releases a statement. Yep. Bravo releases a statement and says,
denies it,
says all of it is unedited. And then Monique comes back and says, "I didn't mean that it was all staged. I just meant that last part. I can hear my cousin and I know it's my cousin and not the camera guy." I'm not saying the assault didn't happen. I'm just saying that like that little last moment was confusing to me. And then Katie goes back on social media and says, "Spoiler alert, I got a call from production. They don't want me at the reunion." And then after that, Candace and Monique get involved and say that's completely ridiculous and why isn't she there? And Monique has said that she's called production several times and has asked them why Katie's not going to be there. And then on top of that, Katie puts a little post on social today or yesterday and brings up that photo, which is why I've been calling her mental health into question, and says that the photo of her with the hashtag Me Too when she's having a miscarriage, but made it look to the public like she had been physically assaulted, bleeding liquids all over her naked body next to the top of a toilet, was not in fact posted by her, but by her former ex-boyfriend. And spoiler alert, she's engaged again, but it's not to Jacob, the guy we saw on camera who accused Michael of doing some shady shit. It's actually this new guy who's doing her hair and Insta stories.
Take a breath.
All this to say there's a lot that's been happening and my brain broke and I was on Team Katie Ross for some of it, mm-hmm. except when it concerns that photo of her, because it seemed like she was being purposeful in not answering people's calls, right. visits to their home, and that she, I do not believe that it was Jacob who posted it and Katie didn't know about it. And the women this week talked a little bit about the fact that Katie sometimes says things mm-hmm. that didn't happen. And I don't 1,000% believe right. that her recollection of reality is reality in and of itself. But I do think that if we're going to talk about the importance of Friends Of, it is completely fucking insane not to have Katie present for that reunion.
Totally. Yeah, I mean Katie... Katie's been such an interesting presence this season, especially,
so interesting.
I think you talked about this last week on your podcast, that she was just so different in the first season. So much, yes. so much has happened in her life in totally. The past 2 or 3 years. And yeah, I mean, she has been quite the presence on this season. She has been really vocal on social media in a way that I think because she's a friend of, mm-hmm. it kind of gives her more leeway to be
totally.
That, to be outspoken
1,000%
like that.
1,000% agree.
And I mean, like you said, I think you have to kind of take what she says with a grain of salt in terms of what she's saying about production and what she's kind of alleging has been said and not said. But again, I think it's a worthwhile conversation because there's clearly some miscommunications happening about, I mean, ever since that production footage aired at the end of last week's episode, there's been a lot of questions. I think to me, that first part of that clip where there's clearly physical contact made.
That is
clearly,
inappropriate. It's you're
yeah,
not sidling
it's,
up to
clearly
somebody.
It's not yeah. a mutual interaction.
Yeah, no consent.
To me, that's like, I mean, that speaks volumes, that clip. I think the second clip.
I don't know.
To me, I can't really say if it's been manipulated or not. None of us were there. There's obviously questions around it, but I do think that at the end of the day, that second clip is actually kind of inconsequential in terms of like
totally
in terms of like shedding light on the situation mm-hmm. and the allegations. But I do think that Katie, she's been on the trips, she's been at all the parties, she's been there for vital moments. She should be at the reunion. I think it would be unfortunate if she wasn't there, because I mean, she was there when Giselle called Ashley and was like, I just read the story about your mm-hmm. husband.
Mm-hmm. Like, and she was like, is he gay?
Right. And she was also there for, I mean, she was involved in the, you know, the alleged like slave comment, and there are all these, she's been in the thick of it this season. She hosted the, what was the party called? The hoedown party where they're out on her
whatever
farm,
the fuck,
whatever
was
that
amazing.
Was party. Like yeah. that was one of the most iconic episodes of this entire season. Like, she was been there, and I think I would love to see Katie at the reunion. I would love to see kind of her side of the story, but I think
it's insane. I mean, she's saying that like they have no right to use my likeness and then not have me there, and that is not how the real world works.
No, it's not how that works.
It's certainly
no.
not how reality no. TV
but
works.
That being
they
said,
can do whatever
think,
the fuck they want.
I think a reunion at Potomac would still be the reunion for Potomac this season will be amazing regardless. These women are bringing it. Like
yeah.
more so than they have. I've loved Potomac since season one, but this is like next level amazingness from them this year.
Yeah, I totally hear you, and I think it's completely batshit insane if they don't have her. And even if they don't have her, it doesn't mean the reunion's not going to be
nope.
great, but I think she has a very, very specific voice that's important. Certainly she'll no longer be back full time because she has said too much,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's crazy if she's not there, because there needs to be somebody calling out questions as directly as she's calling out mm-hmm. on social media. And if social media is the only place where this is existing, that's really a disservice to the show and the viewers. And I think that she has the right to be there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think bringing her back was certainly a gamble. And this is sort of what happens
yeah.
when you have someone here who you don't totally know if they're like on the up and up emotionally or mentally.
I mean, there's a reason why they kind of brought her back several episodes in as a friend.
Yeah.
They're probably
testing the waters.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's played out in an interesting way and
yeah.
unpredictable. And I think that's what she brings. She's unpredictable.
And Bravo saying that second clip where it's like, hey, Mike, whatever, you didn't touch my, whatever the fuck is the language, and like the very, very end of the episode,
mm-hmm.
it is entirely possible that that is unedited and also not the cameraman.
I mean, that's how
Bravo can say that this is unedited and also be responsible for including it. And we're supposed to think from listening to that, that that is the cameraman. It's entirely possible that that whole time, that one moment was Monique's cousin talking to Michael, and they're using it unedited, but they're using it in a way that it looks like Michael talking to the cameraman. It's also entirely possible that it was her cousin at the beginning of it, and then the cameraman himself. Whatever and however they added that audio to the episode does not in any way mean that the assault did not take place. No. And we're talking about a man at this point. The glee or just genuine argument that Ashley made that because charges were dropped, that means that the assault never took place. She is too smart for that. And a lot of people are saying this is like karma, shove it up your ass. And I think those people are correct. But also, like, thank God she's brought up other stuff, right? Because she's been so crucial. But we're thinking about the moment when Andrew's butt was tapped, Katie's former fiance.
The first season.
Jacob, her then boyfriend this season, talking about him saying, make sure you call me on a private line. Him saying sucking Juan's dick, which I do not understand for the life of me why Robin doesn't want to address that directly with her
ex-husband. He was talking about.
Yeah, I think that's insane. And the cameraman assault, as Karen so wonderfully put it, these are all things that came up because Michael could give two shits about consent. And I mean, it's all about men. It's all sexually, it all has like sexual overtones. And none of these incidents happened with the other person's consent. It's always Michael being like the aggressor. And I do not for the life of me understand how a woman in a marriage with a man who's being accused of being sexually aggressive to other men, how you come out of that saying your relationship is stronger than it's ever been. That makes me think your relationship is the most toxic thing it's ever been.
If that was happening anywhere else, you'd be like,
totally. Yeah. And the best gift that baby Dean will ever give his mommy and daddy is the fact that he was born at the height of all of this so that they could use it as a distraction. Mm. Not to say they don't love their kid. Totally. And that child is the identical twin to Michael. Yeah, so he is. Could use there.
That one picture and people. Oh, it my is God. A look. I lost it.
Mazel. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole situation is, it just doesn't give you good vibes. It's not.
It's dark.
It's dark. And I think it definitely raises questions about kind of, is there something about the relationship we don't know? Do they have like sort of like, you know, an agreement or whatever? I think that
I don't think it's
raising questions.
No, totally. Yeah. I 1000% hear you. And I think that people are having that conversation. I think the fact that it's all without consent, I think that if they were like, whatever the new phrase is for swinging, if they had an open relationship or marriage, he wouldn't be doing these things with always to men and always without consent. I think he's like trying to test the water, but he doesn't feel like he's allowed to swim.
Right. That's a good point.
But also people that are on the DL or whatever, it doesn't mean that they are going to, there's another element here because he's being sexually aggressive and is being like a perpetrator essentially. You know, that doesn't just happen just because you're a man married to a woman and you want to like fuck men. There's another level to this. Right. He is like, I don't want to use the word like a deviant, but he's like, what's the phrase
like
that I want to use?
Suppressed.
Right. But having suppressed energy doesn't make you sexually aggressive.
No way.
So I think the fact that people are having the conversation about the DL, to me, put that aside because there's another level here where he is being sexually aggressive to people against their consent. And that is like terrifying. I think that is really obviously awful. Nobody's going to say it's great, but I think that it is something more than what is the state of like what agreement do they have in their marriage.
Wasn't there a question, I mean, when the allegations came out and then between then and when that aired last week, I was under the impression, or at least I'd heard, that Michael was not going to be allowed to appear on the show.
Well,
so that's why I was so taken aback when he was at Quan's 40th birthday party at the Scary Forest, Haunted Forest.
Oh my God. How haunting was him showing up?
I guess they kind of I guess maybe because the charges were dismissed.
I think that's it. I think that, you know, they had a little headline come on last week or the week before where it said that he was suspended from production. So production included as an edit the fact that, you know, they included the fact that he was suspended. I was sort of uncomfortable with the vibe from this week, which I felt like was almost gleeful in the way that they were editing, where they had that one moment where they like made his face, they like froze on him, and I don't remember if it was like black and white or like red and black or something, but it looked like something that you would see in like Spider-Man or a comic book movie, where
yeah, I remember that
it felt like they were making it almost into a little bit of a joke, and there's genuinely nothing funny about
this.
And I think about the camera guy watching this, and I think about other members of production watching this, and you're turning this guy who was a victim of like sexual violence or whatever the accurate legal phrase is, and you're supposed to be working on the same show. Like, I would think to myself, is this the way that they're going to treat me, God forbid? And I think he was allowing himself to be filmed again, maybe to say
maybe
that there
he
was
to redeem himself or something.
Yeah,
but it's not working.
Right. And maybe he felt like he owed something to his wife.
Yeah,
because all of these things are all behaviors
kind
that
tarnishing
he's
tarnishing her too.
Totally. And he's choosing to do this on camera, which is his wife's job. I do not know for the life of me why either of them would agree to be on the show next season. I am desperate for Ashley to stay, but if this is if let's pretend that she really does believe her husband is innocent, which I do not believe that she feels, but let's pretend,
right.
Or even if she doesn't,
she's saying.
Right. Even if it doesn't even matter. Why would you go back on the show watching the editing that's taking place? Like, why would you agree to that?
Yeah, I think her last tweet, as far as I can remember, last week I was kind of watching during the show. She tweeted, like, wait till the reunion. And so I think the reunion is going to be incredibly telling in terms of what her approach to this whole situation is. What angle is she going to take? What argument is she going to take with this? On Potomac, I know they usually bring the husbands out so that
Michael, can you imagine?
Could be coming. I mean, he's come out the past three seasons on the reunions. And I'm sure they're sort of kind of buckled down and being like, okay, like, how do we approach this? And I think that Ashley, I've interviewed her a couple times, and it seems like she really, this is sort of her reality TV is what she, I think she's good at it. I think
she's
that
so good. She oh my gosh, she's
is,
so good.
I think she knows that she's good at it. I think that so she good. Has had her sights set on sort of making a name for herself on a show like this for quite some time. So I think that, I don't think she wants to lose the show. But again, like, editing the whole situation has kind of painted them in a not so positive light. But coming back from this, I'm not sure. I'm curious. I mean, I'd love to kind of see how long the relationship could last, and sort of they're weathering through this, and I don't know, she's sticking by him through these allegations, and so it's sort of like, where does it end with them, or does it ever end with them?
Yeah, I totally agree with you and here with you. And I also think there were like a couple MVPs of the episode. One was Karen for bringing up so well the issue of consent and saying it repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, like, I have an issue with the editors making the overall moment of assault, like having that like gleeful moment with that moment when they like put his face in color and feeling weird about that. But when Giselle sat down with that popcorn,
oh my God,
I could have watched her just eat popcorn for 44 minutes.
So when I watch these shows, a lot of the time I'm streaming it on Xfinity and I'm taking screenshots.
Your screenshots are so good.
I took like 12 screenshots of that scene. Like, she talk about knowing, talking about being meant for a show like
meant
this. Like,
for
that
this.
Woman, it is just the gift that keeps on giving. The fact that she literally popped popcorn for a morning interview on a local TV station, sat cross-legged in her tie-dye jumpsuit, matching jumps or sweatsuit, with her own little popcorn viewing party. That, I mean, you can't. That woman is just genius.
Yeah, they are.
That was a classic moment.
The Potomac women are on a level above everybody else right now.
Completely,
they are so good.
I mean, I think Giselle could. I mean, Potomac is obviously a worthwhile franchise. It's an amazing franchise. But Giselle could hold her own on any of the other ones.
1,000% agree.
She is a top-notch housewife.
Yeah, she is. She really is an all-star. So what do you think is going to happen on the reunion? Who do you think is going to come across on top or come out on top?
In terms of the Ashley situation or just overall?
Overall.
God, there's so much that's happened. I think it will be really interesting to see who is on Candace's side of things. I think that there are a lot of them have turned. I think Karen might be the only one who hasn't really turned on Candace.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways Karen kind of sees, kind of like wants to be sort of a Candace mentor of some sort, or kind of like a second mother to her, because maybe because of her situation with her mom. But I think that Candace has rubbed a lot of them the wrong way. She's been great television this season, but I don't think a lot of them are on her side. So I don't think she's going to come out on top necessarily. I think it's kind of the odds are stacked against her on this reunion.
I think she's going to use, though, the Ashley situation to her advantage, where she's like, this is why I thought you were full of shit. And she might indirectly passive aggressively apologize to Ashley and be like, I was wrong to say that stuff about your pregnancy, but the reason I did was, and then go into that. I mean, like, I think that's possible.
Kind of a good impression of Candace.
I mean, I do what I can.
Candy girl. But I think you're right. But I would love to see, you know, we're going off of Beverly Hills reunion where it was 5 or 6 against 1. I'd love to see kind of different fractions of it. I'd love to see
multiple
people come out on the bottom and on the top. Like I kind of would love kind of just different situations being issues. I think that the biggest things will be Michael and Ashley and Candace's various situations. Yeah, I don't know. I cannot wait for this. I don't think they've taped it yet.
No, they haven't, but they're taping it soon.
Yeah, because Andy sent out for questions on Twitter.
I mean, I'm sure Katie has a couple that she's going to want to send in.
Sure.
Jeez, can you imagine?
Katie from blah, 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 Virginia.
Katie from a farm somewhere. Great.
I think that something that has been really kind of, that's added to the Potomac viewing experience this season has been, they are all so active on Twitter during the episodes in a way that I would love to see from some of these other franchises. Mm-hmm. Like even the Kardashians live tweet, keeping up with the Kardashians. Yeah. Like, I would love more of the New York ladies to live tweet. I would love more. I guess Beverly Hills sometimes does it, but it's just been so kind of unenjoyable this year.
Yeah. It's more like kind of try not to kill me.
They're like, different levels of these situations are added by what Monique's tweeting, by what Candace is tweeting, by, you know, last episode when Monique's texts with Candace went on screen.
Yeah.
And Giselle and Robin called her out for it, and they kind of had this exchange on Twitter. Like, that's a whole other level of kind of meta viewing.
And Monique now blocked Candace from Instagram because it was like just too intense. I mean, I think the only franchise that does it consistently is Dallas, and it's kind of because they have to, because they need to try to like lift up attention for the franchise. Shout out to Potomac, and I think you're exactly
they're in it to win it, these girls.
And I feel like a lot of the other franchise, it's more like, here's one comment that happened and go to whatever, blah, blah, blah. Watch it tonight at 9, whatever, yada, yada. And Potomac is like a spinoff of like whatever the fuck they're saying online. Mm-hmm. And they're using social media in a great way because they're doing it in a way where they're not replacing what's airing with more shit. They're just like
adding context.
It's bonus.
They're adding kind of updates to these situations. Yeah. It's been months since they filmed these. And I think that it just speaks to they know that they have a show that should be being watched by more people. They know that maybe the fact that it's Potomac is kind of turning people off. It's not like an LA or
right.
New
it doesn't
York, but,
feel glam and
right,
glitz,
but it is
Potomac.
One of the best shows on Bravo.
Yeah.
And it just they are so kind of all in on it, and I love that. I love the dedication.
I totally agree. So AGs, if you are not watching Potomac, and I don't know why that is, please watch. You can start watching, because I want you to watch so desperately that I'm going to give you guys permission to start with this season.
Skip to season 4.
Although it would be helpful if you started at least with season 2. I don't think you need to watch the season 1 reunion, but start with 2. Although if you wanted to start with 3, again, I just want you to watch the show. We wouldn't be mad at you.
Support
our
Potomac girls. I mean, they're not all from Potomac.
We
want to
welcome
you.
They don't all live in Potomac, but it's okay. No. There's a Potomac heart and soul and ethos that they carry.
It's essentially a DC Housewives, which is my hometown, which is why I have an extra kind of what's the phrase I'm looking for? I'm rooting for it,
Ben
kind
Franklin,
of more so than I would otherwise. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Potomac is just.
Can I just ask you? Did you watch Real Housewives of DC?
I did. I mean, I was from
you're
DC.
A survivor.
I had to watch it. I was really disappointed in it, obviously.
Yeah, because it's trash.
And I get why they can't bring it back, but...
Yeah, I think it's actually too political.
It's too political, and it just, like, it was dominated by those... By the
Mikhail, the they ruined it.
Yeah, the White House crash, party crashers, so... Yeah, DC, what could have been.
But what is here now? It was badly cast. That was a terrible show. Mm-hmm. But now, as a reward for the five of us that watch DC, and I own a couple episodes because I am insane.
On iTunes?
Yeah, because I wanted to like rewatch
it. Remember when we had to buy episodes on iTunes? Like, that is just...
Isn't that terrible?
Wow.
So bad. It's the worst show you'll ever see. But yeah, we watched it,
good.
And our reward, our karmic... retribution a la Ashley is the fact that we get Potomac.
We get Giselle and Karen. Gifts to the universe. That is the dynamic that will go down in history as kind of up there with the best of them.
And Ray this season having sex with his wife and like looking at her like a sexual object.
Can we not?
P.S. Macy Gray. Are we kidding?
The Macy Gray cameo almost like was my cause of death. Like I... almost lost it.
It was so unnecessary, which is why it was fantastic. Because it was like, why is Macy Gray on this?
What has Macy Gray been up to? Why is she
nothing.
Available? Why is she at a random recording studio in rural Virginia?
Oh my God.
You know, there are lots of questions there. But you know what? Kudos to Karen for locking that down.
And
household
I'm appreciative that we don't have answers. It's just this random cameo.
You know, and that is
just
so
it's like when
Karen.
Candace Bushnell shows up. It's like, right. It's just a thing that happens. It's just a part of their universe.
It's a DC thing, maybe. I don't know.
God bless. Well, I do know this was a total pleasure. Tell the people where to... First off, your screenshots are magical.
So I would say if you... For Bravo content...
Yeah,
Twitter
which
is
the only
is
content.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, what else is there out in this world that gives me joy? Nothing.
I mean...
Yeah, so I live tweet a lot of Housewives episodes. Follow me at Gibsonoma, GIBSONOMA, and that's the same on Instagram.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, same on Instagram. I try to, you know, be like brand conscious there.
See, I should have the same thing. I actually do remember opening Sarah Galley on Instagram, and then I think I changed it to Dame Galley, and I can't get it back.
But like Dame Galley is like so like I mean, where it's like the grand dame of Potomac, Karen Huger. You are the grand dame of Bravo podcast.
God bless. My Twitter's at Sarah Galley, my Instagram's at Dame Galley, and I used Dame Galley because I thought it was funny and because one of my college professors called me Dame Galley. He's like, you're a dame. He thought I was royalty and wasn't wrong.
I mean, you are.
So, thank you so much. So, I don't know how I feel about that, but guys, tell us your thoughts and feels.
Yeah.
This was a total pleasure. I would love to have you back anytime.
Oh, I will come back anytime. I will come all the way uptown for you.
Yes. Oh my God. This
This
was magical. And guys, if you haven't already rated Andy Scrolls 5 stars on iTunes with a 7,000 word essay that will be graded on why you love this podcast, what are you waiting for? This was so fun. I can't wait to kiki with
you soon.
Thank
you so much for having me.
A total pleasure.
I can't wait for the return of New Jersey and Dallas.
Let's go, guys.
Keep it going.
Let's keep it going. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.